ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। I just came from Sharjah. Had a small program there earlier this morning. Returning, there was enough time to have darshan at the Srinathji temple, so I went there for darshan. And I was very happy that the priests received me very nicely, yeah, very, very nice welcome. And with respect and affection, and I thought I should convey that to you, how nice that is. Our Vaishnav culture is a very sweet one. The Srinath temple is going on in the disciplic succession, parampara, from Sri Vallabhacharya, who famously composed the Madhurashtakam, Madhuradhipate Akhilam Madhuram, celebrating the sweetness of Krishna. Krishna is very sweet. Bhuktam Madhuram is the prasad that he gives is very sweet. They gave me, the priests, after taking darshan, I spoke with them a little bit, and they gave me some of the prasad. If you go to Nathdwara, you'll see sweets like big bricks this size, and then they're cut into little pieces about this size, so you can take it. So they gave me some prasad, and I told them, ye jeeb ke liye nahi hai, ye hriday ke liye hai. So actually, that's a fact. Of course, we like to taste the nice taste of foodstuffs offered to Krishna that is described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in the mood of Radha, always thinking how to relish the taste of Krishna's lips by kissing him. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took prasad, he thought, this is touched by the nectar from the lips of Krishna. He said that this food, everyone eats this kind of food. It's made with grains, spices, sugar, but how does it taste so nice? And the answer is because it's mixed with the nectar from Krishna's lips, so it becomes more sweet. So Krishna consciousness is undoubtedly very sweet. Everything about him is sweet, and that means everything. Madhuradhipater akhilam madhuram. Everything is sweet. So the priests also greeted me very nicely, and it was a very sweet exchange, touching exchange. So I thought from that we have so much to learn from Vaishnavs. We say outside our sampradaya, but actually we say there are four Vaishnav sampradayas. But actually it's within the sampradaya, all within the same. The sampradaya is worship of Krishna. Some worship him as Radha Krishna, some worship him as Bala Krishna, some worship him as Lakshmi Narayana, Some worship him as Sitaram. But all acknowledge Vishnu is supreme. And outside the Sampradaya means Karmi, Jnani. Jnani here used in the sense of one who thinks that Jnan is topmost. Then demigod worshippers, worshippers of self-proclaimed gods. Most modern Hinduism is much affected by the self-made gurus and gods, people who just by self-promotion they became lauded as great saintly persons. But Vaishnavas know Krishna is supreme, Vishnu is supreme. There may be different terminology and somewhat different approach and understanding. But all true Vaishnavas, they accept Vishnu is supreme. That is the meaning of Vaishnava. Vishnu asya devata iti Vaishnava. One who accepts Vishnu as his worshipable Lord is known as a Vaishnava. So this Vaishnava dharma, it is particularly characterized by sweetness. When we say Vaishnava dharma, actually that means dharma, because dharma means to act according to our nature, and everyone by nature is a Vaishnava. Jivesvarup hoy Krishna nitya das. Sometimes people ask me, when were you converted into a Hindu? But there's no question of, or others would say that you cannot convert into a Hindu, you have to be born a Hindu. I used to hear this 30 plus years ago. Not now, I don't hear that. But these are all sectarian ideas. All religions are one, we often hear that, but we should hear about the difference also, that which has the clear concept. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would say that no one can become a Vaishnava. So what are you preaching for? No one can become a Vaishnava, because everyone is a Vaishnava by nature. It's only that we forgot. It's not that you become, we're converting people to Vaishnavism. We're making Vaishnavas. You can't make a Vaishnava. Everyone is a Vaishnava. But we forgot Krishna Bhuli Se Jivan Adi Bahimoka Taiv Maya Tare Deya Shangshara Duk. We forgot Krishna. What a terrible thing to do. What a crime. What is the worst crime? Who's the worst criminal of the 20th century? Is it Adolf Hitler or Joseph Stalin or Winston Churchill or Sai Baba, who's a candidate there? Who's the worst? Who's the worst of the worst? Well, we're all criminals. We all did the act of extreme ungratefulness in Ramayana, that is Lakshman. He describes to Sugriva, thinking that Sugriva had forgotten his promise to assist Rama and was just enjoying a life. Lakshman explained that there's no worse sin than ungratefulness. In Mahabharata also, there's narration that even the jackals won't eat the dead body of an ungrateful person. So, but we're all in that situation. We're all criminals. We've all forgotten Krishna. It's an act of, there are different crimes. Crimes of volition and crimes, what's the other one? Neglect. I can't remember the exact term. Commission and omission. Yeah, that's it. So you can, there are crimes you deliberately, you do something you shouldn't do, that's a crime. Or if you fail to do something that you should do, that's also a crime. So in both senses, we're not serving Krishna, and we turned away from Krishna, and we're not serving Krishna. So we came into this material world. And we're suffering in this material world. But everyone, by nature, is a Vaishnava. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. Shadha Kabunai. Shrabanadi Shuddha Chite Kariye Udoy. This nature of a Vaishnava is to be uncovered by the process of devotional service, beginning with hearing about Krishna. That is to be discovered or uncovered. We're not converting anyone. That's why Srila Prabhupada said in his very famous speech about chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, that this chanting is not an artificial imposition on the mind. It's not something that we bring from outside, but it is the natural function of the soul to chant Hare Krishna. That is why kirtan is not so. Nowadays we have who can sing the nicest kirtan and different musical arrangements and so many things, which are nice, maybe nice. But real kirtan is not to do with the throat. It is not a matter of the throat or the tongue or the breath. These are the three constituents of sound or song. But the kirtan comes from the heart. It is a function of the heart. I'm not talking about the thing that beats within your chest. So everyone is a Vaishnava. It is a natural function of every person to glorify Krishna, to serve Krishna, to be surrendered to Krishna. Krishna asks us to surrender to Him. Sarvadhaman parityajya mamekam sharanam braja. But it is our natural function to be surrendered to Krishna. The very fact that Krishna asks us to surrender to Him means that we are in a wrong position. We don't... This sarvadhaman parityajya, this mamekam sharanam braja, this instruction, this is not among pure devotees. Those already pure devotees. We don't find among the gopis of Vrindavan or the residents of Dwaraka, there's discussion. Sarvadhaman, you have to surrender to Krishna. There's no such discussion among them because it's outside their scope of thinking of that one cannot be fully in love with Krishna, what to speak of surrendering to Him. So to us it sounds like a very strange instruction. You think, why should I surrender to Krishna? And to surrender devotees who know nothing but Krishna, who just by their very life, they're madchitta, madgata prana, bodhayantas parasparam, katayantas jamangnityam, tushyanti cha ramanti cha. People are living in that atmosphere of always discussing Krishna, always thinking of Krishna, whose lives are Krishna. Madgata prana means their life already went to Krishna. Their life is Krishna. They talk about Krishna among themselves. It's just like no one comes here and gives a lecture, or no one teaches in the school that you must breathe. All of you should breathe. Now, it's a very important thing to do, breathing, isn't it? If you don't breathe, you die. So why doesn't anyone teach us to breathe? considering that we'd all die without breathing, isn't it important that we were told to breathe? No, because everyone does it. They don't think anything about it. It's a natural, seems to us to be a natural thing to do. So for those who are already in pure devotion, you don't have to tell them to think of Krishna. You should think of Krishna. It's the most important instruction, but it would sound as unnatural, as strange to them as telling us to breathe. Why do you tell us to breathe? I mean, everyone does that, don't they? So we are in the strange position of being told to surrender to Krishna. But it's a very strange instruction, actually. It's for very strange... This instruction is meant for very strange people to surrender to Krishna. It's for people who are not surrendered to Krishna, which is a very strange, unnatural situation to be in. Of course, this instruction is meant for persons who are strange, but not as strange as others. Those who are more strange or more unnatural, they won't even hear this instruction. To them it seems, this Savadhaman Parityaja Mamekam Sharanam Vraja instruction is for strange people who are not so strange that they're ready to hear it. And people are really bizarre. They don't even like to hear it. What is the best instruction for them they could possibly ever hear? They have no interest in hearing it whatsoever. Not only do they have not have an interest in it, but they think it's wrong. It's something. What a strange thing. They think it's strange. So we welcome bhakti wherever and however it manifests, and especially the great acharyas, they come to this world and they establish Krishna bhakti very strongly by various means. What Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur called the positive method and the negative method. So the positive method means to glorify Krishna, to be very, to manifest the symptoms of a Vaishnava that is described about Prahlad. Well, he describes himself to Nrisimhadev that you have sent me to this world, Prahlad says, to manifest the symptoms of a Vaishnava. Vaishnavas should be in this world so that others can see what it is like to be a Vaishnava. If it's just something written in a book, then people, they won't have an example to follow. If Srila Prabhupada came to this world and he wrote books, he gave great importance to his books. But if he hadn't personally come, who could have believed that anyone could be a Vaishnava or even know what it means to be a Vaishnava? Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he said something similar, that he had been raised as a Vaishnava, but he didn't... The descriptions of Vaishnavas being totally detached from this world, he said that he didn't think that was possible in the present day. We hear descriptions about great Vaishnavas who are fully detached from the world, but he didn't think it was possible. Of course, what would be called his biological father was a pure devotee of Krishna. He was a grihastha. And outwardly, he had the symptoms of a person who's involved in the world. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur thought this complete absorption in Krishna consciousness without anything else to do, think, or say, only to be absorbed in Krishna, that is not present, that is not possible at the present time. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur sent him to Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj for Diksha. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that upon observing my Gurudev, I could understand that it is possible to be in this world and be a Vaishnava. That is discussed in Bhagavad Sandarbha, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur also discussed Vastu Siddhi, Swarup Siddhi. There is this, one can be perfect in Krishna consciousness in this world, but still not be, still one has to attain direct service to Krishna. But devotees like Gaur Kishore, practically they're not in this world at all. They have nothing to do with this world whatsoever. So that was the ideal of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But then his Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaur Kishore both told him to preach. And then anyway, it's a long description of how he appeared in some ways to be like a worldly person. Before he took sannyas, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, before he took sannyas, he was living the same mode of life in many ways the same mode of life as Gaur Kishore. And Gaur Kishore said about him, well, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, that I see the renunciation of Rupa and Raghunath in my Prabhu. He used to call his disciple his Prabhu. Because the same extreme renunciation, which we can only hear about, for us it seems impossible, how Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he had done some preaching, but he appeared to become discouraged, because he would preach the truth that all these people who are supposed to be representing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are misrepresenting him. They are chanting is only cheating. They're not chanting, they're cheating. They're just showing themselves to be Vaishnavas, but they're not. They simply want to mislead others. So he told the truth, but the truth is not very welcome. If you want to be popular, don't speak the truth. It's not well received. So Siddhanta Saraswati became, from the external point of view, discouraged. So he decided, okay, I'll chant. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had given Siddhanta Saraswati the order that you stay in Mayapur and you oversee the affairs at the Jogapit, the temple that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had established. So Siddhanta Saraswati, he established a grass hut, and he would oversee the affairs. At that time the affairs was not much, because there was no big temple like nowadays. There was a small brick-built temple, and hardly anyone ever came, because it was an extremely remote spot. There were no roads, there were no pathways, there was no transport. The nearest public transport was if you take a train from Shelda station. You can still do the same thing nowadays, from Shelda to Dubulia. And then you can walk about 7 kilometers. In those days, there were no roads. You'd have to walk through the fields. Or you could come the other side too. Still, you can do that. Krishnanagar, and then take the toy train, they call it. Now they made it broad gauge after more than 100 years. to Surup Ganj, and then you can, if you can find a boatman, nowadays there are regular boats plying all the time, but at that time there wouldn't have been, and then you take a boat over the Jalangi and then walk up to Mayapur through the fields. No roads, no paths, no people coming. It's just some fields, that's all. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur made a small temple in the middle of the field where no one ever came, hardly ever came. And you couldn't keep, you hire Prajari, but they wouldn't stay. They'd run away with whatever little collection was there, they'd run away with it. They'd go, you know, it's a common thing among pujaris in the modern age. They run off with the collection. Or worse still, they stay and take the collection regularly. Illegally. It's meant for the deity. So, Siddhant Saraswati was overseeing the affairs at the Jogpit, and he made a little cottage, and he would chant, and chant, and chant. He would chant 3 lakhs of names every day. That means 3 times 64 rounds every day. And in the rainy season, he would, water would come through the roof, he would have an umbrella in one hand and beads in another hand, he would go on chanting. So he was extremely renounced. That was his ideal. That's the ideal of any Vaishnava. Why should we have anything? What have we got to do with this world? Naam bina kichu nahi ko archodya bhuvana majja. There's nothing in the world except Harinam. Nothing. Everything else is just useless. That song they were just singing, another Bhaktivinoda Thakur song. Miche mayar boshe jacho beshe kacho habo dubu bhai. What are we doing in this world? We're just in the grip of Maya. Sometimes going under, sometimes coming up. But just, it's sukh and dukh. Sometimes we think we're happy and we're miserable, and sometimes we know we're miserable. So there's nothing in this world, just chanting, chanting, chanting. Then some people came, they would come to see him. They heard about him and he would speak, and they became his disciples and they took him to Calcutta. He took sannyas. And then he appeared to be a worldly, to some people he appeared like a worldly enjoyer. He would ride in motor cars, which sadhus don't do that, by the way. Sadhus don't go in motor cars. According to Shastra, sadhu, sannyasi, they only walk. They're not allowed even to go on, not on any vehicle. They're not allowed. So that was considered. He would sleep on a bed. Sadhus don't sleep on beds. He would wear fine clothes, leather shoes. So after taking sannyas, it appeared that he was more of an... After renouncing the world as a sannyasi, it appeared that he'd become more of an enjoyer of it. But there was a purpose. What was that? To bring the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to the supposed elite people of the world, who are always the biggest cheaters in every generation, unless they are Vaishnavas. Then the leaders, they're all cheaters. Because if you're leading people in but not leading them to Krishna, then you're misleading them. So leaders, they have to be preached to, most of all. Because if they change, then the whole society can change. Yad yad acharati shreshtas tatat evetaro jana sayat pramanam kurute lokas tadanuvartate. Those who are the leaders of society, people follow whoever they consider is best and respectable. People tend to follow them. As Srila Prabhupada commented that the mass of people are like pawns in the hands of the leaders. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted to preach to them. But he knew that if he was to dress in the way which he dressed when he was living at Mayapur, which was in practically in a very ragged kind of manner, that these people who judge people by their dress, their erudition, their wealth, completely meaningless things, that they would not even begin to listen to him. So he dressed like that. And he lived as if an opulent person. But it was all for the sake of preaching the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which are very, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's are very, teachings are very sweet. Krishna bhakti is very sweet. It's very pleasing. But to preach it in this world, there is the positive method and the negative method, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said. And he said that, especially in this age, the negative method is better. And he said that in the Satya Yuga, Hiranyakashipu better served the purpose of the Lord than did Prahlad. In the Treta Yuga, Ravana better served the purpose of the Lord than did Hanuman, by the negative method. So you may wonder how that is. He didn't exactly explain that, but it can be understood that any number of people can surround someone and praise them, but that doesn't establish that he's the Supreme Lord. It's by killing Hiranyakashipu that Nrsimhadev became famous as Prahlada Lada Dayan. Anyway, he was the pleasure of Prahlad means who is very happy. And who is the happiness? Who is he who gives happiness to Prahlad? He is called Prahlada Hlada Dayan, means Nrsimhadev. Similarly, with Lord Rama, he was a pious king. There are many pious kings in the history of the world. If he had not killed Ravana, who would have known that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead? And all the adventures that took place leading up to that. So the negative method is, according to Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, necessary for preaching. Negative means to point out what is wrong. That is required. If we simply say that to people that Krishna is sweet, people say, yes, my wife is very sweet also. So what do I need your Krishna for? Your Krishna is somewhere up in the sky, but my wife is right here. I can enjoy that sweetness right here. That's only imagination. This is factual. I can enjoy just here and now. So these wrong ideas have to be removed from the world. And we find in the pranam mantras, both of our own Srila Prabhupada and of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that they're preaching the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and removing the wrong, combating the wrong ideas. We find that, yeah. Namaste Gauravani Shri Murtaye Dinatarine Rupanoga Virudha Apasiddhanta Dvantaharine. That is said of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He is the very form of the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He uplifts the fallen by teaching those teachings. And he is the destroyer of the darkness, which is, or he removes the darkness. He is the remover of the darkness that is brought about by the misinterpretation of the teachings of Rupa Goswami. Similarly, about Srila Prabhupada, it is said that Namaste Sarasvate Devi Gauravani Pracharne. So the same thing. He's preaching the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as did his guru, but he does so as the servant of his guru, and particularly Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatani. He saves the Western countries from the impersonalists and the voidists. So, combating the wrong ideas. His sweet, Krishna is very sweet, but as Vallabhacharya also says, that Damanam Madhuram, his suppressing others, his subduing others. So who does he subdue? Well, Krishna is famous as Radhanath, Gopijanna Vallabha, but he's also famous as Murari, Chanurari, Madhusudana. There are so many demons who Krishna is famous for killing. So that is a business of the Vaishnavas, that in this world we should not only be relishing the sweetness of Krishna's kissing the gopis, but we have to perform the service of Krishna by opposing the theories that make people think that surrendering to Krishna is not our natural position. There are many wrong ideas in the world. In fact, all ideas in the world are wrong, except this idea, Mam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, surrender to me. That's why Krishna says, Sarvadhaman Parityaja, because everything is wrong except this idea. So, you all sitting here, you might accept that. I hope you all do. I'm sure most of you do. But, simply among ourselves to say this is not the service of Krishna fully as he wants it. We have to propagate that among others also. The sweetness of Krishna consciousness cannot be tasted or experienced as long as we think that anything else is worth experiencing. As long as we think the bitterness, the what is actually bitter in this material world, we take that to be sweet, then the actual sweetness of Krishna will remain just an imagination to us. And we may approach Krishna consciousness in a manner in which we are able to maintain our material attachments and at the same time think that we are cultivating Krishna consciousness. But that's another kind of cheating. It's a self-cheating. And those who propagate that, they're also, whether they know it or not, propagating a kind of cheating. Just like yesterday. It's a very common thing. One devotee told me how he'd taken some students to Mayapur and they all enjoyed it. But it's the whole attitude in there is a wrong attitude. You may think, well, if we tell people it'll be enjoyable, then they'll like it. But if we're thinking the whole aim is how they will enjoy it, we'll make sure there's plenty of ice cream and spaghetti. And you can, of course, you can get that all in Mayapur, but that's, Srila Prabhupada didn't establish his project so that people could come for a picnic and eat ice cream and spaghetti. They should learn who they are. Who are we? What is their dharma? What is it that Krishna is asking us to give up everything to surrender to him? What is that? That their whole perverse idea that we have of enjoying this world, that has to be given up. That we have to think that I am meant for Krishna's enjoyment. Then we can begin to enter into bhakti. If we think that bhakti is something for us to enjoy, then we are planting the seed of the same upper sampradayas that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came to remove the darkness that they had created. So, we have to be very careful of this. We may say, well, if we speak so strongly, people may not come, and if we speak things that people like to hear, then more people will come. This proposal is something like the call to absolute nonviolence. Those who say there should be no violence whatsoever, we should stop any kind of violence in human society, such people are the greatest enemies to human society. They will cause more violence to human society than people who are sensible. If we say that no violence, that means no police. If anyone does anything wrong, we're not going to catch them, we're not going to punish them. If you make such a proposal, then immediately all the rogues will loot everything, and then you'll have to have a major counteraction to put everything in order again. So if we stop all violence or the threat of violence, it will cause such chaos that it will cause more violence than if you just have regular violence, which is required to keep down the rascals. So in the same way, if we say we'll just speak the sweet things about Krishna consciousness, and we won't talk about all the nasty things which we don't like to hear, like, for instance, giving up sense gratification and only eating food offered to Krishna. If we say all those things, people won't like to hear it, and so not so many people will come, and we'll just tell them, all you have to do is chant. That's a question that just came up in Sharjana. Isn't it just enough to chant and we don't have to think about giving up sense gratification? Why? What all this talk about giving up sense gratification? Just chant, that's all. Although I've been quoting from Thakur Bhaktivinoda, the whole song, that these are our enemies. Kam, krodha, lobha, moha, madadi. These are our enemies. Jatane charo, charo hai. He says, be especially attentive to giving these all up. And the question, well, you just chant Hare Krishna. You know, what do you have to give them all up for? You don't have to make any of them. Just chant Hare Krishna. And that is an incorrect understanding. And by propagating this, that, well, you know, you just chant Hare Krishna and get some mercy, and it doesn't matter, you don't have to think about giving up sense gratification. Don't talk like that, otherwise we won't get so many people coming. So we may think, great, we got so many people coming and they're all enjoying themselves very nicely. That will require a heavy acharya like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to come and clean up all the misconceptions which come out of this. When you introduce the idea that we shouldn't speak about giving up, we just speak the positive things and don't say that all these people are rascals. Prabhupada could say it, but we can't say it. Only Prabhupada could speak the truth. We shouldn't speak the truth. Is it only truth if Prabhupada speaks it? So many misconceptions. We're inviting this, so many things which are unpleasing to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his own name if we do not follow the path of the acharyas in simultaneously establishing chanting of the holy names, appreciation of the sweetness of Krishna, and pointing out that which should not be done, differentiating reality from illusion for the benefit of all. If we don't do that, then people will remain in illusion. And we think, well, they're chanting Hare Krishna. And Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Bahu janma kare jadi shravan kirtan tobuto napai Krishna pade prema dan. They're chanting Hare Krishna. They're going for millions of lives like that, but they're not making any real progress because they're not following the process properly, which means that jatane charo, we have to be very attentive to understand what is that which we should not do, not think, not say, not eat, and stop that. Otherwise, the example is there of rowing the boat, but forgetting to untie it from the shore. So if we remain tied up to our material attachments, we can go on putatively performing bhakti for many lifetimes, but we don't make any progress. So, these points have to be understood. Krishna makes an extreme demand. Surrender unto me only. That is the meaning of initiation. We may think, what do you have to do to get initiation? You have to chant 16 rounds or 16 clicks or whatever it is. 16 times 108 clicks. And what else do you have to do? Those four regulated principles, and you have to pass the test and you can get initiated. Hari Bol! But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Dikka Kale Bhakta Kare Ata Samarpam. Real initiation means to surrender to Krishna. So it's not a formula that you have to, you do this and you do that and you get some mercy and that's it, Hari Bol. But Jodnag, what is that? I quoted that yesterday. Jodnagraha bina na janmai preme. Krishna prem doesn't come about unless we're very serious in making an effort to invoke the mercy that comes. It's not such a cheap thing. That is the fault of the Prakrita Sahajiyas. They take it as very cheap, that you can maintain your sense gratification and you just chant, that's all. Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, right? Eva Kevalam. You know, Eva Kevalam means no sense gratification also. Eva Kevalam. You just chant and you don't have to do anything else. Oh, that's right. But nothing else means no sense gratification also. They think, well, Eva, that means you don't... The Prakrita Sahajiyas say, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam, Eva Kevalam. It means you don't have to follow any rules. That's how they interpret it. But the real interpretation is that, yeah, you don't have to follow any rules because you're not doing anything else anyway but chanting. So if you're only chanting, then you're not engaging in sense gratification. So these are all points to be considered. And Hare Krishna, I'm over time. So if there are any questions about this, then about what I've spoken, then please, you can proffer them now. Yeah, otherwise there may be thousands of questions. The perfection of devotional service to Lord Vitas. Well, anything to do with the class? These other questions you can ask your, what are they called? Namhata leaders or something like that. Otherwise, there can be millions of questions. from all angles.
Maharaj, isn't it a fact that Prabhupada, when he initially introduced Krishna consciousness, and he first gave them the name, and then it's only as later when he talked about the regulator?
In the beginning, the proposal is that in the beginning, Srila Prabhupada first of all gave them Harinam, gave the people who are coming Harinam, and then only later he introduced the principles. Well, Srila Prabhupada himself spoke of that, yena tena prakarena mana krishna niveshayat sarvavidhi nishedasya etayo eva kingraha. Srila Prabhupada put from two verses, he put these together, that in the beginning, people should be brought to Krishna consciousness, and later on, all the rules and regulations should be introduced. Yes, Srila Prabhupada did that. From the beginning of his programs in New York City, he would have kirtan and lectures. And you can hear those lectures, and it's the same straightforward philosophy. He didn't water it down. It's not that he didn't give the philosophy. And in the beginning, he initiated very easily, but he still had the people promise that you have to follow these rules. He didn't check them so much, but toward the end of his manifest presence in the world, he was saying, don't bring people for initiation unless they're following. So the temple prayer, those who recommend, they have to take the responsibility. If people are falling away. So he did want to become more strict. He said, in the beginning we have done for working, but now we should be very strict. He said about Brahmins, that people they should actually be following all the things very strictly. He said once that he said to some of his leaders, you should go and ask these Brahmin-initiated people, ask them what the mantras are. If they can't say, take away their thread. Make them Shudras again. So there's a whole imagination being extended about Srila Prabhupada, that he was only kind and sweet and smiling and tolerant, but actually, to a lot of devotees, he may have appeared like that, but to his leaders, he was very strong, those who could take it. Of course, Srila Prabhupada, of course he was very kind and sweet, but that kindness didn't always manifest in the sentimental way that people think that kindness is. Srila Prabhupada told the story of a boy who was raised by his aunt, but she was very indulgent with him. She never punished him for doing wrong or told him what was wrong. As he grew up, he fell into company with criminals. Then at one point, he was captured by the police and sentenced to death, public execution. And he was standing on the gallows, about to be hanged in public. He saw his aunt in the crowd crying. He asked, "That's my aunt who raised me. Can she be brought up here?" So she came up, and he was tied up. So he said, "Come up very close to my, put your ear next to my mouth." So she did, and he bit it off. And in the other ear, he told her, "I'm here because you didn't discipline me." Prabhupada told that story. Heavy story, huh? So those who take responsibility for spiritually guiding others, they have to. It's not just sweetness and blessings and birthday parties, and you have to tell them what's right and what's wrong. Earlier we were eating non-veg and not following any rules and regulations. Now we are on the process. So can we call ourselves Vaishnavas? I guess that it says, so we call ourselves Vaishnavas, question. I guess that means, can we call ourselves? You can call yourself Vaishnava if you like, but no Vaishnav calls himself a Vaishnava anyway. So Vaishnav doesn't go around and say, well, I'm a Vaishnava. Srila Prabhupada, one of his disciples, he composed a poem addressed to Krishna and sent it to Srila Prabhupada. And the poem said, oh my Lord, your devotee is I'm your devotee speaking to you. Prabhupada wrote back and said, a devotee doesn't say he's a devotee. Doesn't think I'm a devotee. We often hear devotees saying, well, when I first became a devotee, or they are, how many years have you been a devotee? Wish, we're praying for that day. Kobe hobe bolo shedin amar aparad haguchi. Shudhaname ruchi kripa bole hobe hridaye shancha. We're praying for that day when we could actually become a Vaishnava. Generally, conventionally, we use the word Vaishnava. We may say about others, but if we think, I am a Amito Vaishnav, e buddhi hoile amani nahobarami. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, if I think I'm a Vaishnava, then I won't be in the mood of not wanting respect. I think, I'm a Vaishnava, people should respect me. And then the result of all that will be that pratishta ashi hridoy dushibe hoibo niroyagami. The desire to be respected by others will pollute my heart and make me a candidate for going to hell. So it's better not to think I am a Vaishnava. Better to think, I am aspiring to be, even though I am unworthy, I am aspiring to be accepted as a servant of the Vaishnavas. That is the way of thinking. That is the Vaishnava way of thinking. Not that because, well, I stopped eating meat and I'm clicking my rounds and I'm a Vaishnava. That is neophyte mentality. Acharya meva haraye puja shadhayate. Natad bhakteishu chanyeshu sabhakta prakrita smitaha. One who thinks, well, I have great faith in God and I worship him and I'm a devotee. No one else is a devotee. I'm a Vaishnava. I am the Vaishnava. I am the Vaishnava. When devotees recite the 10 offenses, what is that they say? There's something they say. I can't remember. Can't remember now. Others, we should call them Vaishnavas, but we shouldn't call ourselves Vaishnavas. The whole process is to think ourselves very low, if we think ourselves, not that we actually behave in a low way, but we should think ourselves very low. What is that? Uttam haya, what is that? Nijake mani chunadham. Even if he's the greatest devotee, he thinks he's lower than grass. Then if one has that attitude, then it becomes a candidate for being pulled up. But if you think I'm already up, then why should we pray for mercy? If we think, I'm a Vaishnava, I'm already there, then why should we endeavor? I'm already a Vaishnava. You know, stand aside, Prahlad, Pandavas, Gopis, I'm coming.
When the person dies, a devotee or a Vaishnava, he takes rebirth again, is a devotee Vaishnava or depends on the karma?
Vaishnava doesn't die. He reasons. He reasons. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said about Haridas Thakur, He reasons ill who tells that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still in sound. A Vaishnava dies to live and living tries to spread the holy name around. So a Vaishnava never dies. We say about Vaishnavas, the language we use is uppercut. They have gone out of our worldly vision. We no longer see them. They've disappeared. Srila Prabhupada said that for a Vaishnava, what to others appear as death is, he said, it's just like they go to sleep, and when you wake up, you're with Krishna in the spiritual world. So that's for Vaishnavas. But it may be more than stopping non-veg. There's more to do. And even chanting, remember, the warning is there. Bahu janma kare jadi shravan ketan tabuta napai Krishna pade prem. So we should consider these points. We may think that's meant for someone else. It's meant for all those useless people. But we may consider Krishna's not a, because we click our way through 1,700 whatever it is a day, Krishna's not obliged to come down and bow down at our lotus feet and say, "Oh, thank you very much. Now I'm carrying you back to Godhead with a brass band." Krishna's not obliged. Krishna's never obliged. We should understand we're completely dependent on Krishna's mercy. Completely. It's even if you chant, I was saying about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, even if we chant 3 lakhs of names a day and perform great austerity and live in Mayapur, still Krishna is not obliged to take us to the spiritual world. There's nothing we can do to force Krishna to take us to the spiritual world. We are completely dependent on His mercy in all circumstances, in all times, in all phases of time, past, present, and future. We're completely dependent on Krishna's mercy. He's merciful. He's not this nasty God who throws most people into hell forever. That's what I was told about God when I was a child. So fortunately, Krishna is not like that. He actually loves us. He does want us to come back to him, but he's not obliged. When we consider ourselves completely dependent on his mercy, then he will accept us. So, shall we finish? And you have to have the aarti and everything.
You want us to solve the aarti while you can continue the talk? If there are questions?
No. Well, you're the chief servant around here.
I am the chief servant.
I'm on a bigger seat than you, don't forget it. Kobe hobe bolo shede nama. When will that day be there?
I have 10 more minutes of question and answer. If you want the app, you can just continue silent.
All right, so more questions.
Guru Maharaj, we see and we also tend to use Yukta Vairagya in a very...
Yukta Vairagya, time, place and circumstance. Be careful with all of this. Be very careful of self-cheating. First of all, there has to be a spirit of vairagya, then there comes the question of yukta vairagya. It's not that in the name of vairagya we enjoy everything in the world. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was the proper person, the qualified person to teach the principle of yukta vairagya, because he had lived a life of the kind of vairagya which is expected of sadhus, but even in a more extreme way than most sadhus. So he could teach about that. And he very plainly, even though he used motor cars, palatial buildings, properties, luxurious clothes, leather shoes, even though he used all these things, he very clearly was attached, very strongly attached to the service of Krishna. And he wasn't attached to using these things for any other purpose than for the service of Krishna. He never did. So that is Yukta Vairagya. But if we take all these things and we have any spirit of enjoying them, then it's not vairagya. Even if we use these things and it is in the service of Krishna, but still if the spirit of enjoyment is there, then it can't properly be called yukta vairagya. That's why we have to be very careful of this spirit of enjoyment. Even to say the word, we had an enjoyable trip to Mayapur. Even to use that language introduced to neophyte devotees who, unless it's clearly explained to them, that then the element comes that we judge the trip by whether we enjoyed it or not, not how... What service did we do in Mayapur? How much did we resolve to surrender more, give up sense gratification, serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Instead, if we think, oh, I enjoyed it, then where's the vairagya? Vairagya has to be there. Natural vairagya comes from immersion in Krishna consciousness. Just like this point that the gopis of Vrindavan, they never think about surrendering to Krishna because it's just outside their scope of thinking, because it's outside their scope of thinking that they could at any, for even a fraction of a moment, do anything except be completely absorbed in total love of Krishna. So the question of surrendering to Krishna doesn't arise. So in the same way for them, vairagya doesn't arise. The question of vairagya, what for? What are they going to... They have no attachment to this world. They're just completely absorbed in love of Krishna. So there's no question of them becoming yogis. They objected to Krishna. Why are you teaching us about all this yoga? We're just housewives. There has to be Krishna consciousness. Then there can be real vairagya. Otherwise, if we think, oh, well, in Krishna consciousness, we're also allowed to have nice cars, nice houses, nice food. Hey, it's good, you know. You can have a good time. Then that's not vairagya. That we may say to people coming newly, that, oh, you see nice food and you can have a nice house and all this, but that's not the teaching. The ultimate teaching is vairagya vidya nija bhakti yogam. So vairagya, there are two kinds. One is deliberately adopted for the sake of becoming detached from material objects. So yogis, they leave society, they go to live in the hills, in caves, and deliberately accept austerity so that they can become detached from the thought of wanting to enjoy this world. The other kind is where one is so absorbed in love of Krishna that he has no thought of enjoying this world. Thus we find the description of Pundarika Vidyanidhi, who to Gadadha Pandit, who had been a lifelong brahmachari, Pundarik Vidyanidhi appeared to be a great worldly enjoyer, with servants and a beautiful soft bed and silver spittoon, servants fanning him. He looked to be like a great worldly enjoyer. But that was simply the role that he was accepting in human society. He had no other interest than to serve Krishna. But if anyone else, if you think, well, let me have all these nice things and I'll serve Krishna, out of attachment to those things, then that is not natural, vairagya. Srila Prabhupada once says, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasar Thakur. How was it that Rupa Goswami and others, they were householders, and Tyaktva Turnama Shesha Mandala Pati Shraining Sada Tuchavat Bhutva Dina Ganesha Ko Karunaya Ko Pina Kanta Shrito? How is it that they, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, gave up opulence, family, aristocracy, all these things, and went to live as highly renounced mendicants in Vrindavan with just a patchwork quilt and a covering over the lower part of their body? And Ramananda Rai, he was also a great devotee, but he didn't give up his family. He lived, he had an opulent salary. He retired early, but he was a servant of government servant on a high salary, and he was given a lifelong pension at the same rate that he was being paid. So he was living in opulence as a householder. And others gave up. So Srila Prabhupada asked Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, how is it that one Rupa Goswami gave up everything and lived in great austerity, and Ramananda Rai, who was living with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I mean, means that at least every night he would spend the night with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discussing topics of Krishna. So he's living with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is a sannyasi, but Ramananda was living like an opulent householder. So how is that? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that it's not a question of one's position, it's whatever is required for one's service. If the Lord orders you to live a certain mode of life, you should follow that. Whatever is best for your service, whatever is required for your service. And different people do different things in the Lord's service. It's not that everyone does the same thing. Ramananda Rai, although living as a householder, in the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by his personal behavior, he exhibited the principle of how a devotee completely conquers lust. Even though he wasn't a sannyasi, he was living with women, and that incident is described. He was actually training young women to dance for Jagannath, but he had no thought of enjoying them. So he demonstrated how a devotee can completely conquer lust. And there are other devotees. Haridas Thakur, he demonstrated the principle of complete tolerance. Whatever happens, just chanting, and then he gets punished for chanting, beaten, lashed, again and again and again in 22 marketplaces, and just go on chanting, go on chanting, go on chanting, that's all. If I'm sitting comfortably in my cave, I'll chant, and now they've pulled me out and whipping me, and go on chanting, that's all. Complete tolerance. Sanatana Goswami, he taught complete humility. And Damodar Pandit, he taught the principle of how Vaishnava should not simply be a blind follower, but he should have the principle of objective criticism. That's how Srila Prabhupada explained it. So different devotees have different purposes to serve. Not everyone is doing exactly the same thing. They're serving Krishna in different ways. Devotees think, I'm going to be a gopi. I'm not just going to be a cow or a blade of grass in Vrindavan. I'm going to be a gopi. Come on. Who do you know? I'm got to be a gopi, right? But if it was only gopis, there couldn't be any Krishna Leela. There had to be cows, otherwise there can't be gopis, right? And there have to be servants. How could there be any Krishna Leela without Mother Yashoda? Of course, she's a gopi too, but mostly everyone wants to be a gopi dancing with Krishna in Rasa Leela. But there has to be everyone else also. So everyone has a different role to play. But no sense gratification. Everything for Krishna. Whatever it is. That's this, whether a blade of grass in Vrindavan or the gopis who are dancing on that grass, the motto of Vaishnava is Krishnarthe Kila Cheshta. Everything should be done for Krishna's sake. Not for me. That is a Vaishnava. If it's not just chanting 16 rounds and eating vegetarian food. There's a question that the hand is going up. Is it? You have a question? Okay. Well, can we get the microphone over there? That's too long. It may go there. Is there a cordless phone?
No, there's no.
Okay, so please speak loudly and I'll repeat the question if I can hear it. That's why it's a good system to have it written down.
You're saying that when we are following the devotional service, we are practicing chanting 16 rounds
How to tell people who are attracted to speakers who speak Krishna Katha from the Bhagavatam, but who don't teach any principles, that these speakers are not actually giving love of Krishna? Well, you tell them philosophically. You tell them that Krishna prema is, it's required, that Krishna prema is a long way up. But generally people who are attracted like that, they won't listen to you anyway. So they are, if you think you're already there, then why should you listen to someone who's a, I already feel love for Krishna in my heart, so what's all this about rules and all this? So such people are cheating themselves. You can give them, you say, Prabhupada's been saying, Bhagavatam, no. You like to hear Krishna Katha? Very good. Well, here's Krishna Katha, plenty of it. Give them the books. They think they're on a higher level. Well, everyone thinks they're on a higher level. The atheists think they're on a higher level. Muslims think they're on. Everyone thinks they're the best. So you find someone who's not yet committed in some line. Generally, if we're going to bring people to practice Krishna consciousness seriously, mostly they'll come from the ranks of those who are not yet committed in some line. Mostly. And we should preach also, make people aware of the difference between actual Krishna consciousness and that which is a semblance of it. Very early in his movement in the Western world, Srila Prabhupada introduced Back to Godhead magazine. That was for, he himself had started that in India as under the order of his Sri Guru Dev, as a medium for taking up questions like this, the common exposure of common fallacies and common misunderstandings. So that magazine that is specifically meant for that, and these points should be addressed, point by point should be addressed. So we can write for that magazine. You can research this point, write an article, and hope that it gets printed. Of course, there has to be. Writing is an art also. But this magazine is particularly meant for that, to distinguish Krishna consciousness or reality from illusion. What is illusion? It is non-reality posing as reality. So everyone thinks what I'm doing is the best, our path is the best. And then we have to show why Krishna consciousness, as given to us by Srila Prabhupada, is Shreya Shruti. It is the actually auspicious path. Okay, that's it. That's all for now. Shreya Shrutim Bhakti Udasyate Vibho.
Kesan Bhakti Vikas Swami Maharaj Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai Gaur Premananda.